Yes.
Okay, everybody's here. Great.
All righty then.
Okay, so Kathy, we're ready for you.
All right. The shipmaster intent is to know that revolution with resolution leads to revelation. To be the spiritual revolution with an individual moment by moment resolution to be the action of truth. And so 2017, Understanding and Unity.
Fantastic, Kathy. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And while I'm thinking, and maybe Callie is supposed to come at 5 o'clock, but her dad usually brings her early. So if she comes and walks in early, then I'll mute for a minute. I have some instructions that she can start on, you know, to work on something before we finish the call. But I may just disappear off for a minute, but it's to set Callie up.
Perfect. All right. So we are talking about God's law of adjustment, and I'm trying to think how we were doing this, and I just figured we'll just do what we always do, which is, like, have people talk about what you thought when you read it, where you went with it. Michael and I did a little bit of talking about it today. So I don't know, Michael, maybe you want to start since we kind of talked about it a little bit.
Sure. I hadn't read it when we talked about it, but I've read it before, but a number of times. But I reread it again today, and there are so many points in it that it's just a very I don't know how I want to say it. It's, there's no wiggle room in it. It's written so that you can't end up having a kind of, well, maybe this is how it is, and maybe this is how it is, kind of response to it. Adam Dickey is very decisive and deliberate in what he's writing. And, you know, just the opening sentence, man lives by divine decree. Well, how many people really think that? You know, and especially in when he was writing it. It's just written in about as absolute a manner as possibly can be. And for me, it was a very powerful read because of that. And he says that when we understandingly declare the law of God is present and is in operation, we have invoked or brought into action the whole law and the power of God. And that struck me, too, because sometimes I ask, hey, okay, I'm praying about this. Is it going to work? Yes. You're bringing your thought into the whole law and power of God. So if I'm saying, is this going to work? Then I'm saying, well, you know, sometimes I believe God is powerful, and sometimes believe he isn't. So it doesn't leave any room for the reader it makes the reader sort of decide as he goes along where he's going to agree or disagree with the way in which this is written. And I think Becca, you brought up a really good point today in our conversation. And I'm not exactly sure how you worded it. But, so would you tell me that point again? Because
Which one?
Yeah,
there were so many. Right. But you know, you said where he was saying, well, this is what you have to do in order to get the law of God to be, you know, you have to do some things. And, of course, we talked about some of the things that I have to do. But the, just the way he was saying it, I mean, what was it that triggered that? It was pretty early on our conversation.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly, but I think it's the part, it's probably the part at the beginning when we were talking about that we have to let go of every, all our preconceived notions about who we think we are and what we've done and what's going to, he's basically saying, which we are basically saying too, but he says it so well, that it, that God's law always adjusts, but we don't always adjust. We don't see it because we haven't let go of it, of the human part
right.
of what we're hanging on to. So any right. of our belief systems or our treasured points of view about ourselves, or, you know, we talked about innocence and learning, making things, we're wise because of what we've done, but we can't hold on to it and define ourselves by those things.
Well, that's just the point, and that's right. He's saying exactly that about, you know, if you're not going to be willing to change and forget your old habits, because we were talking about change, my habits. To some extent, I was changing my statement. I said this is a time when it's the middle of the year, and I want to change my statement from letting go of old habits to something else. And that brought up a lot of things. And the beauty of working with this was that, and talking about it with you, Becca, was that I recognized during that conversation we had that I really did have a very bad habit, which was to stubbornly hold on to something and agree with something. Let's say it's something that I couldn't do. You know, I just couldn't get my head around it. And therefore, I'm very stubborn about giving up that point of view. But if I keep with that point of view, that law of adjustment is going to have an awfully hard time. Even though it's God's law of adjustment, which is operating all the time, if I don't give up that point of view that I'm just stubborn about, well, I can't do this, and I don't know how, and I don't know how to figure it out, then God's law of adjustment doesn't have any room to operate. And I thought that was a really good point. It was, even though the law is universal and always present, it just, you're not allowing it into your thinking, and you're holding to your old view, and you just can't get anywhere doing that. And I think I'm finally learning that.
I'm laughing, Michael, because I think that's what we're all, I think we're all finally learning it, and then we're still finally learning it. You know,
I know.
Well, it's my moment.
And we finally stop learning and then we have to finally start learning it again.
Which is why it's the moment by moment.
Yes, it is.
Constantly. Yeah, Dale, you were talking about Tom Brown's mission with surrender in relationships.
Yeah, it's very much like this. Since I went through that physical spirit class, it had 14 sessions that were 5 hours each long. And the theme that ran through every one of them, all the exercises we did all the time, during those classes was missionless surrender. So when we did an exercise, we had to get rid of any preconceived notion or thoughts about what we thought about the exercise or the thing we were doing, the because we would have to read and feel chemicals. There everything has a signature, and we have to feel that signature and understand what it is. And when the human sense is so prevalent, you can't do it. It's impossible. And so always what we were taught was start to feel it and then let it go and missionless surrender. Just surrender to it with the missionless part of it, because you can't have any expectation of any kind going on. Then it gives you that space to hear, and that's what you want to do. You want to hear the first thing that comes. And like it said in here, there's wisdom to it, or maybe there isn't. You have to start discerning that, but you have to surrender to that. Otherwise, your human mind's going to go, oh, I think that's pretty cool. Well, maybe that's not the message, though. So you have to surrender to it. So it's a constant thing. Very difficult to do, because that's when you really find out, wow, there's so many human thoughts there. It's just ridiculous. And you didn't think you thought a certain way about anything or something in particular, but you find out you did. So,
because we're used to it.
Because we're so used to it.
Yeah.
We've put ourselves in a particular prison in a way, because we think a certain thing and it keeps us imprisoned in that thought process. And so this, it breaks you out of it. This gets you out of that place. This adjustment. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Michael, do you have more things? We had that new affirmation kind of thing that we made up for you before we said this morning. Do you want to share that? Uh-oh, Michael might not be there. Are you still there, Michael? Is anybody still there?
I didn't hear Michael go off. Yeah,
I've been talking forever, and I just don't know why I'm not heard. Because I was muted.
Okay.
I'm not muted now. But, Belle, we were talking.
Are you sure?
What's that?
Are you sure you're not muted?
Well,
oh, wait. Of course you're not. I can hear you. So.
Yeah. I could tell, right, if I was still muted, right? Anyway, so corroborating what Tom Brown was saying is on page 12 in this little booklet, should we endeavor to, okay. So long as we endeavor to settle the difficulty ourselves, we are interfering with the action of the law of God. And that's why you have to surrender. That's perfect, Del, because that's, you have to surrender.
Yes, it has to be the mission list, because otherwise a surrender can still be, well, okay, I'll surrender, and oh, I can't wait to find out what comes up. It's an expectation. So anything, or let's see if it really works. You know, that kind of stuff. You have to completely, and this is what this tells you, this God's law of adjustment is, that's it. It's all there. It will handle the situation, but it's also, like it says on the last page of that, right toward the very end, we cannot hope to work out of this human sense of existence without making mistakes.
Yeah.
We may make many, but we'll profit by them all.
I love that word, we'll profit.
We'll profit by
them all.
And that's the same thing we were doing in Brown's class was, okay, surrender again. Surrender again. Surrender again. Because as those things come up, you start to really get a good sense of, oh, that's a human thing. You start to really know because you do it so often. And so it's a constant thing. But you also learn something with each one of those things.
Yeah.
Right.
Because you get better at it.
Yeah.
It's like we were watching some superhuman show.
Oh, gosh.
This guy
so
was
weird.
Detecting frog calls out of 4,700 frogs.
There are four. Let's make this clear.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's a contest show called Superhuman, So they're all humans. They're just normal people, I'm trying to say.
These are people that
have a specialized skill that they've practiced. And this one guy has learned, there's 4,700 different kinds of frogs
and toads,
and he can identify any of them by their sound.
Mixed with bird sounds and crickets and everything else, and he can, and it's pretty subtle, but he tunes right into it and can pick it right out.
He can hear different frogs.
So you can imagine the practice this guy did.
Yeah.
So
it just makes me laugh.
Yeah.
I know. It was pretty funny.
Yeah, my thought was, I hope he didn't spend too much time doing this, you know. I just began to imagine this sort of really, really nerdy person who is going to spend all his time learning 4,700 frog calls in all their iterations and variations and so forth. And it's like, okay, dude, go for it if it floats your boat.
But he didn't spend too much time at it.
I don't know. It just struck me as funny, the things that people do.
Well, you get very good at these things. And again, that's what the practice of surrendering does. And it's a practice of listening for understanding God's law of adjustment is the continuous practice of...
There goes the human thought.
Yeah, the continuous practice. And so you get very good at it. It's like we went birding the other day with a guy who was an expert at this. I mean, he spent 60 years doing this stuff. So he would see just a tiny little flight pattern that I saw it, but he said, oh, that was, and he would describe exactly what the bird was and what it was doing. I'm like, how in the heck did he do that?
Yes.
But it's just because he spent this time, all this time doing it. So
basically we're trying to do the same thing with the spiritual idea of listening for what's true and letting go of what's not a human thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I'll say this one other thing that I want to hear more about to say, but whenever you're talking about you can't have expectations, it always reminds me of the story of my teacher who told the story, my prison science teacher who told the story, and this is like 40 years ago, probably 40, how her son had some horrible sickness and he was up in his crib and she was having a hard time with it, even though that's what she did, and you know, healing work was what she did. So she had asked someone else to help her, and there was two points to the healing. One is this is trying to take your joy away, so don't let this thing going on with your son take your joy away, because that's your meeting, don't let it take away your idea of what God is. And so, and then the second one was don't look. So she wasn't allowed to go up and look and see if the boy was getting healed. And no peeking deer was what she was told. No peeking deer. So she kept, you know, obviously mm-hmm. took care of her son and did all that was necessary, but mm-hmm. didn't peek to see if he got better, which he did, of course, but can't peek in the meantime because you're expecting God to come a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like that's kind of what that was about. So we're back to you, Michael.
Yes. Okay. So, Becca, do you want to say what
do you remember it, or do you want me to say it?
You say it, because...
Okay, this is what I'm saying about Michael.
Okay.
Michael lives in the present and is wealthy and able. So that's what I'm saying to myself about Michael, so that I don't have any human belief systems going on about Michael, so that God's law of adjustment can work in my thinking about Michael, and then Michael can say that about herself also.
Right. I was wanting to change my statement about letting go.
That's still letting go of old habits, because
it is.
that's what we're doing, is letting go of the old habit of describing you or ourselves in a specific way.
Right.
And so we just had a new statement.
Right.
That's very adjusted to an old habit of not being wealthy and not being capable. So we just did wealthy and able. I guess we could do capable, but I like able for some reason. Mm-hmm. But so yes,
wealthy and able. I remembered it as being in the present and being as wealthy and able. I guess.
Well, you live in the present, mm-hmm. so that counteracts the belief that and you're wealthy. Counteracts the belief that in some way you are not, and you're able counteracts the belief that there are things you don't know how to do.
So right.
You're in the present, you're wealthy, and you're able, and which is getting rid of old habits.
Yes.
It's a thought that we're getting rid of.
Right.
Which we all are. So, all right, so let's hear from somebody else. Is that okay with you, Michael?
Absolutely.
All right, so
I'd like to go next just because then I won't be talking when Callie's here, because that'll make me, you know, feel less.
Okay, go for it.
Speakish. Is that okay, Jet?
Perfect.
Okay, not that I have lots of insightful things. I just saw this in relationship to how I felt on the last Shiftmasters call. And I made a choice. I had time to listen to the Shiftmasters call today. And I just made a choice not to, because it wasn't that it was wrong to be in that space. That's exactly how I saw it. That's exactly how I saw myself, my life, my body of work, if you want to call it that, or whatever. And it was a really, really painful time. And I know that, and so I just decided, you know, I'm not in that place now, so I don't want to go back and hear it. And at first I thought it would be good to know what then was and what now is. But when I thought about it again, it was just like, yeah, no, I don't have to do that. And so anyway, and that was fine with me. But I talked about it, and this all applies to me because I saw this law of adjustment as an extension of, or the depth of, or the truth of the sort of the process I went through after that. So the next day, because that was a Monday, so we went birding on Tuesday, and I just talked to Bill about it. You know, my sort of, I want to say despondency, but that wasn't it. It was just the surprise of, wow, you know, I really thought that I could make traction with this, and nothing has happened, you know. And so basically his take on it was, so do nothing. And I thought that do nothing was another thing to do. You understand? To do mm-hmm. nothing and see what happens as a result of that, you know? But it wasn't. Yeah. I knew you'd get that, Del. So it was really just to do nothing and let it go. And the first thought was, okay, so what if I never do accomplish this task? And so what? Does it matter? It was like, no, it's just another thing, you know, it's just, so then, and that felt just really good, like really freeing, but I wasn't doing it for the really freeing, I was going to say freely reeling, but I couldn't, okay, tongue twister, and so it was just to do nothing, and so when I would have a good idea, because I've had a million good ideas about how to handle the situation, when I'd have a good idea, I would just say to myself, that's a good idea. But I didn't invest in it. Like, that's a good idea that I should do something about. It was just, that's a good idea. And I basically just let it go. And, you know, it was like, it doesn't matter. And I'm going to do nothing. And so the interesting thing, don't know if they're related, don't know that they're not, but I liked on page whatever it is. Oh, I moved the book over there. I don't know if this has anything to do with it. Okay, unless it is willing and ready to lay down its own sense of human will and stop human planning, put aside human pride, ambition and vanity, there's no room for the law of adjustment to operate. So I noticed that, you know, when I read it, because after then, I did not read this until I started this on Friday, you know, and I would read little bits before the kids were leaving because I didn't want to have to try and devour it all today in the midst of my day. And so I just took it bit by bit, but it really felt like, oh, yeah, this is what I'm talking about in terms to myself about the do nothing. And also the sense that, you know, God is never adjusting. It's already adjusted. There is no adjustment to make. It's already just perfect, but it's our adjustment, like we're going to a chiropractor or something, and they, you know, adjust us and line us back up. So it's our own sense of adjustment, but it just gave that same, it took me to that verse I have a lot of confidence in that I don't have in front of me now, but it doesn't matter. But it was about being transformed. You know, you just look at God and we're being transformed. It came up today in a direction session with a directee because he was talking about things he felt he still needed to work on and was feeling very badly about those, like things weren't getting done here. And I could just see in the picture of my mind, I felt like, okay, this is the same conversation I'm having too, but it's just, it's not its moment. It's not its time. There isn't anything I have to do. And so I was just sharing with him the picture that I got of that, like it's a stream moving down quickly and nicely and burbling away. But some of these stuck places are just like a little stuck batch of leaves and twigs that are stuck together and they just haven't been separated. And maybe they've swirled over to behind a rock and so the water's moving on freely. The other ones, they're all going past. Maybe it's their turn. Because I thought of other things that that are just going splendidly. They're just moving down the stream splendidly. And so when it's the time for that other little batch of weeds and sticks that are stuck together to flow and be unstuck, then they'll flow out. The water flow in, catch them and go, or not, or whatever, but it's all fine. You know, so it just seemed as if this was, the element of this. Just let it go. It's all fine. It's all getting done. So much transformation is happening. So much is just going in that, the goodness of the flow, that whatever isn't at this moment, it just, don't worry about it. You know what I mean? Just let it go. So do nothing was so great, to consciously do nothing and to be the relieved of the, oh, I have to do something. You know, because always I think that. And so it's like, okay, whatever, you know, just whatever. And it's funny because this huge, huge project came in. If you talk about getting rid of things, there have been boxes and boxes and boxes of stuff going out of here, you know, with three more sitting on a shelf ready to go, you know, when Ken can put them in the car and take them to Goodwill, and more stuff in a discernment pile and more stuff, and I'm sure this is going, we just haven't got the box yet to put it in. And the whole of my kitchen is getting transformed because I wanted to put all my vases in one place. And you guys know that that was an ongoing project that finished an hour before the kids got here. But then more stuff came out. Let's do the glasses while you're here, Laurel. Let's do all the cups. And so I feel like adjusting, I'll use that word, my kitchen is like when Tony Stark, you know, in the Iron Man movies, he goes up to what looks like it's just air and he starts scribbling and writing on it and it just all forms in front of it. It's like that's what it feels like my kitchen is doing. I wake up in the middle of the night and stay awake because I'm moving things. And so this huge flow is just happening, and I'm hardly participating except that I'm doing it. You know what I mean? I'm doing it. I'm washing the stuff, deciding if it goes in boxes, checks with people, send photographs to people. Hey, do you want this? You know, la, la, la. It's just been this incredible, non-stoppable event. So it reminded me of there is no room for the law of adjustment to operate. So I don't know if those two things were related. We're not related, but it doesn't matter because I don't have to think about that anyway.
Exactly. Yeah. But, and I do think they're related. If there's no room, they can't. And you're right. God, it's not God adjusting. It's God's law
right.
is adjusting our situation, and
right,
but only because God's law is working. And that's, I love that part about the, at the very beginning, when the law means or implies a rule that is established and maintained by power and cannot, I mean, and it's unyielding, unchanging.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
a law. Yeah, so that law of God adjusts every situation back to God.
Yeah, so it was that, just so powerfully written to state this one principle that, you know, as Michael was saying, sometimes we absolutely believe and sometimes we forget altogether. And so it was so good to have this person write it, as you said, Michael, and I forget exactly how you put it, so decisively, so clearly, you know. And so it was good. And then that horrible, scary situation of that poor person, you know, who got itself bolted into whatever that place is, you know.
Yes.
And then to just, because there was a way out. There was a way. He did it. In the end, he did it, you know. So that way was there, but he had to hear what it was. So he had to just hold still and hear. So that's interesting. You know, I hope if I'm ever bolted into something, I, instead of just, you know, my eyeballs rolling out and my hair curling straight out because I completely lost it, freaked out, and don't bother to get me out, I won't recognize you when I come out, because I'll be insane. And so, you know, but that person was able to hold on and hear the message. So turn this bolt this way or whatever it was.
Yeah.
You know, the answer was there, but it was not anything he could figure out in his mind unless the track had been laid down. You know what I mean? He could have got it from his own mind, so to speak. If the track were, say, laid down, when I did it this way, maybe his mind also tracked, okay, it could be done undone that way. I don't know. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter. It's still divine, whether it's something he then saw within the workings of his own, how he had put it together, or whether it was simply divine, turn it this way or do it this way and it'll undo. It doesn't matter. It's just that the answer was there, and he had to shut up and put himself in that place of it is provided in order for him to be able to see it. So
yeah, and I think that what you're saying is don't do anything is close to what Dell's saying about missionless surrender.
Yeah, yeah. And it's when I surrendered the idea of I don't have to think about this, do nothing. It was missionless in the surrender, and it wasn't that I was surrendering it in order to see then what would happen. I wanted no thought about it at all. You know, I just wanted, that's a good idea. And then it was gone. I didn't attach to it. I didn't want to use it. I just wanted as much as possible to just be, and I didn't use the term surrender, but I can see that would be the word for the do nothing, just do nothing. There's nothing I need to do. And I don't can't yeah. say I was thinking there's nothing I need to do, therefore God will.
Uh-huh.
I didn't think that even. It was just I need to do nothing. I just knew clearly I don't need to do anything. And so very different frame of mind to be in.
Yeah, I guess. Absolutely. Need some notes there?
Are they? Are they?
No,
I'm
just.
Okay.
Just
okay. So, shall we go to Jet and see where that takes us? Shall we go there?
Yeah.
Are you sure you want to go there?
Yes, I'm very sure.
Well, I want to thank you all for bringing up all the points that occurred to me, so I don't have to talk, which is wonderful.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Sure.
Did anybody get Michelle Nanush's blog post today entitled
yeah.
Sit Down on the Green Grass?
Yeah, that was
no.
definitely a lot of adjustment.
She writes about, she was reading in her Paris office, and she was reading the account of Jesus feeding over 5,000 people by multiplying loaves and fishes. And in the text of the Bible, part of that is he instructed them to sit down on the green grass, and she was thinking of many ways that she looked through the various Bible commentaries to see what the reasoning might have been that he instructed them to sit down on the grass. Her favorite was perhaps it was to prepare them to be served. So her example, which is probably no less nerve-wracking but slightly less dangerous than Mr. Allen's experience on the destroyer or submarine, whatever it was that he was on, was she, it was one of the hottest days of the year. And she writes, later in the day when the temperature hit its peak, the live departure board at my station indicated that all trains to my town had been canceled. I quickly regrouped and found a much longer route with train changes that would eventually get me home, but a power outage knocking out all the departure and track screens prevented me from knowing which track I should go to for my train, and there was no staff to be found. Then a distinct message came to thought. Sit down on the green grass. I felt immediately calm. I needn't be disturbed by the heat and confusion. Rather than dashing left and right to find the train, I could go to a gate, sit down in the train, and expect something remarkable. So I did. I proceeded to one of the 27 available platforms and boarded a train. As I sat down, the train pulled away. Then came an announcement that the train was a high-speed train to a destination an hour's drive beyond my home. We buzzed past station after station without slowing. When I was tempted to be alarmed, I prayed and got the same message to expect the remarkable. It was a lesson for me of trusting in good. After about 20 minutes, the train slowed to a stop in the town next to mine. As I walked out of the station, a bus that goes past my apartment pulled in front of me and opened its doors. I was home in a third of the time it had been taking me on these hot summer days.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of years ago, and I know Del talked about this in the gathering during Tai Chi or at the gathering about taking a step. For me, it was in Tai Chi in one of my private lessons a couple of years ago. And you lift your foot and you allow the divine step to take place. You trust that the step is going to be right. And I was practicing doing that, and I have been practicing doing that because I'm learning new forms or a new way to do forms and new forms. And it's difficult, to say the very least. Just as a slight aside, Del, I woke up on Friday morning and I felt like I'd done 100 crunches.
Why? Is that what you guys
do? I worked pretty hard, I guess.
Yeah.
I was pretty interesting. And I'm still kind of feeling like that. And all I'm doing is that two-minute stance. So.
Yeah.
So, to sort of just recap what I've heard everybody say that occurred to me to say, and I did have one extra piece in the book, but I mean, I thought that was so appropriate that particular blog post came from Michelle Nanouche today, because it's exactly the same premise as Mr. Allen's description of being stuck on the boat. You know, when you're tempted to grab the dog by the collar so that she can find her way out because she's old and infirm, and there we go. Sorry about that. Another little commercial break, letting the dog out. You just have to get out of your own way. When you're tempted to be frightened, all it does is it just freezes you in place. And so it was just so appropriate that she said, I just have to take the step. And then when she gets on the train, the first thing she hears is that it's a high-speed train going to take her, you know, an hour out farther than she really wanted to go. So, you know, but she had that, she maintained that trust and knew that, what was it, where did they write that? Christian scientists, and even make, where is it? We're at labor, at, well, yeah, we may make many, but we'll profit by them all. But it says, and even when you make a mistake, we are at liberty to change our belief of things as often as we get new light. We should not let our vanity compel us to adhere to a proposition simply because we've taken a stand. We should be willing to relinquish our former views and change our thought on any subject. But somewhere in here he says, even if we make a mistake, because God would not, where the heck did he write that?
Oh, yeah, I know where that is, but I don't know where that is, but let's see.
Knowing that God's law of adjustment regulates and prevents, it's on page 12, and governs all things, and even if we choose the wrong way, we as Christian scientists, we as individuals and unique spiritual blessings have a right to know that God will not allow us to continue in a mistake, but will show us the right way and compel us to walk therein. And the key to that is that we have to listen. And when we listen, we can call it prayer. We can call it missionless surrender. We can call it listening. We can call it any number of things, but what it is becoming still to allow the message to come through. Perry Marshall has a thing that he says when he goes in to sit down, and I guess it's his version of meditation, which really appealed to me, was what he does is he says, speak, for your servant is listening.
Yeah, and it comes from the church that he belongs to.
Right, and I love that. I love that. When you first hear it, it may sound a little bit like a demand, but it's not. What it is it's that trigger. There we go again, Del, you know, teaching us trigger points. That trigger to say, okay, monkey mind, shut down and allow divine principle to guide us. So in the very beginning, just to recap, the efficiency of law rests entirely in the power that enforces it. I love that. Very,
yeah.
Very powerful,
yeah.
Statement. And Michael read the, when we understandingly declare that the law of God is present and is in operation, we've invoked or brought into action the whole law and the power of God. This law of adjustment is the universal law of love, which bestows its blessings on all alike. When we're willing to give up our frightened and uncertain sense of things and let the divine mind govern, then and then only shall we behold that all things work together for good to them that love God. Now, they don't say anything about, well, bad things happen for a reason. Yeah, you know, it says there is only good, and so the need or the desire or the compulsion to rationalize is human. It's not divine, and we need to let that go. And of course, we may make many mistakes, but we'll profit from them all. Is that it's the actually me who's crazy with the yellow highlighter? That is the only highlighted line in my book. It's been there since the first time I read it. however many million years ago. I don't know how long ago you sent this, Becca, but it was a long time ago.
And what was the highlighted line? What I missed that.
Oh, so yeah. The paragraph starts, "We cannot hope to work out of this human sense of existence without making mistakes." And then I highlighted the next line, which says, "We may make many, but we'll profit by them all."
Right.
And that's the only highlighted line in the entire book. I was tempted to, you know, mark up the rest of it, but I didn't. And every time I read it, I find something new or something, you know, I notice something that I didn't see before. And I did that again, you know, when I read it just before the call, because even if I read it yesterday, I would, you know, in the day's activities would forget, what did I want to say again? So it was wonderful to just sit down for a half an hour quietly before the call and just read it again. But it verifies, maybe that's the word, I don't know, my sense the other day that I was feeling like, you know, Kathy and I have been doing accountability for I was going to look it up, it's 4 or 5 years now, and I was looking at my book, my everything book, and I was thinking to myself, you know, is this still meaningful for me? Or am I just in the habit of doing this and I'm doing it by rote? And I sat out on the porch and you know, I thought about it from various points of view. I said, okay, suppose I stop. And it was like, you know. So that's how I knew it was and is still meaningful to me. And then I said, well, because the question came up, why? Why did the question come up? And the answer was, what are my questions? My questions are, what am I accountable for, and who am I accountable to? And the answers are, I am accountable for myself. That's a big thing for me. And I am accountable to truth, you know, divine truth, capital T. And since we're so fond of calling me a warrior of sorts, including me, I'm fond of calling me a warrior of sorts, Christian Scientists are minutemen armed and equipped to respond to any call of wisdom, always ready and willing to abandon personal views or opinions and to allow that mind to be in them which was also in Christ Jesus. Love that paragraph.
I did too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I may have to highlight that.
Well, you know what Jill and I did was we printed out the, you could go to that link that I put in the email and it's a PDF.
Yep. Yep.
And then print up. So we highlighted a bunch of crap off of the printout. It's only 2 pages, believe it or not.
I believe it. Yeah. It's quick, but it's very, very deep and so succinctly written, which is, I think everybody said that tonight. You know, it's so clearly written. Michael's saying there's no wiggle room. There is zero wiggle room in this. It's very direct. A la Mrs. Eddy. Mrs. Eddy didn't leave much wiggle room in her statements either.
No. She had the ability to write to people, write in a way that people that are just beginning to understand it couldn't read it. And then but if you read the absolute statement, there's no wiggle room. So, I wanted to add this little piece because I want to keep on working on, I want to do this for this month. And I think that if we could now that we've talked about it out loud, there's probably things that we could think about during the next 2 weeks about what, how we could apply God's law of adjustment. But I was thinking, I'm taking the, a course, online course, called The Story Grid, which is about writing books. And Sean Coyne is the instructor, but he's also Stephen Pressfield's editor. So he and Stephen Pressfield and Sean are partners. And so he was doing a little piece on resistance. And his answer was in the story of writing was this, but I thought it fit really well to everything, is that when you feel the resistance to not want to write, or you don't know what you're going to write, you go to your craft. And that's what he's teaching, is the story craft, how do you craft a book. You go to the techniques that you know. And in many ways, I think that's what we do, is that we have the broad idea of what we want to study and who we are and the spiritual truth and God's law of adjustment. And then sometimes, just once in a while, we feel resistance to that in some form. You know, this, I like Kathy's picture of the stream that's burbling along, and then there's a blockage in this place and there. So there's a little piece of a resistance. And then we go to our craft. We go to the tools that we have that we've been studying, and we focus on that, which breaks, it takes us away from thinking about the resistance, which also goes back to what Kathy and Del were talking about, is don't do anything. Don't try to fight the resistance. Just move away from it. And he's saying, go to your craft. And that's what I think all this studying is going to our craft. And not that we're not fighting, we're going to truth, and we do that. So I would like to continue with God's law of adjustment in the Shiftmasters. We have lots of things that we're talking about in the Women's Council or sharing the circle. But with God's law of adjustment, every time I read this, it reminds me it's not about being human. It's not about being in material place. It's about what actually exists, the infinite, where only good exists. You have to get that feeling of it. But sometimes, since we go day by day just trying to deal with the day by day stuff, that feeling, that essence of infinite possibilities goes away. And then one last thing that I was reading to Del earlier is the Bible lesson this week. Christmas Science Bible lesson this week is life. And I thought the very first passage in the Bible that they're reading is the law of adjustment. So I'll read it to you. Blessed is the man that trusteth in the Lord, and whose hope the Lord is, for he shall be as a tree planted by the waters, and that spreadeth out her roots by the river, and shall not see when heat cometh, but her leaf shall be green, and shall not be careful in the year of drought, neither shall cease from yielding fruit. So as we are in the place of the divine, we don't have to worry about that.
And isn't that the first Psalm, Psalm 1?
It's it's Jeremiah 17:7.
Huh.
But it's also in a psalm too. But this happens.
I think it's the first psalm uses that same language.
Yeah.
Psalm 1.
So anybody else? Anything they want to?
Blessed is the man who does not walk in the counsel of wicked, nor stand in the way of sinners, nor sit in the company of scoffers. Rather, the law of the Lord is his joy, and on his law he meditates day and night. He is like a tree planted near streams of water that yields its fruit in season. Its leaves never wither. Whatever he does prospers.
Psalm
1. Mm-hmm.
Jeremiah.
Yeah.
I've asked you this before, Kathy. What version of the Bible do you use?
whatever comes up on Bible Gateway when I look it up.
Oh.
And so, you know, I had Bible Gateway up since we were talking about speak, Lord, your servant is listening, because I knew where one, and as we can see in Scripture, it comes up in different places, but the one I was thinking of was in Samuel. So anyway, so I had it up. I don't know what version it was. So I just put Psalm 1, and it came up with that because I remembered that that was very similar to Psalm 1. So sometimes I'll look for a particular, or if I want to see it, I'll just change it on Bible Gateway, give me a new, you know, version.
Yeah.
And you can get millions of versions, and I like them. And so, but yeah, Bible Gateway.
So I said to look it up and see how different ways that they said that.
Yeah.
All right. So anybody have anything they want to add to our delicious, delightful discussion tonight?
Well,
I guess I wanted to know what. How are we going to continue with this? Are we going to? I'm not clear on that.
I just want to keep on using it for this next 2 weeks.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, use it specifically, because I realize a lot of us didn't read it till today or didn't review it again till today. So now that we've talked about it and read it, pick something out of there and use it.
Yeah.
I'm going to the craft.
Yeah,
I was glad to use it today in the direction session, because when I was talking to my directee about that stuck place or the thing, you know, the little leaves and twigs. Hi, Callie. That are, you were stuck in the water. To me, that's what I was talking about. Just let it go, and God's adjustment is taking care of it.
Yeah. Go ahead.
And like what Jeff was saying about speak, and because your servant is listening.
Yeah.
You know, how do you practice these things? So I would suggest we each practice according to what we're hearing for ourselves.
Exactly.
You know, I sit and I listen.
Yes.
Yeah, I do a calm meditation every day, in fact, a couple times a day. And what I do is I listen to my breath, and I just say the words in as an inhale, exhale, and I say out. Mm-hmm. And that keeps the mind busy. And then what I'm experiencing is I start to get visions, a lot of visions. And then I say, I surrender. And then I even talk about God's law of adjustment in that same sense. And so more visions come.
Yeah.
So find out for yourself what works, what gets you into that place. And then I think that's a good thing to share next time is how we practice it.
How
do we become more of what God's law of adjustment is?
And how can the law of adjustment become more ingrained in our daily life instead of, you know, how much calories did we eat today? I don't know why I said that one, but, you know, the weird things that we do. That we get stuck in instead of the unlimited, infinite possibilities of good.
Yeah.
Which is using God's law of adjustment to get there.
Yeah.
That work for everybody?
That sounds like a wonderful idea.
Fantastic.
All right.
Okay.
Very good.
So shift week, ladies. So we get to spend a week together. Cool. All right. Thank you all for being here tonight.
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night, everybody.
Bye.
Good night.
So good to hear everybody's voice. Thank you.
Yeah, you too, Michael. Bye-bye.
Bye.